If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East.
Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show. On this Monday, we're bringing you a full show live from the studio today. Later, we're going to have the executive director of Stop Antisemitism. You know, the group that found all those viral videos of anti-Semites or people behaving in a way that could be interpreted as anti-Semitic. In America, immediately after this terrorist attack of October 7th, she's going to be here to reveal their anti-Semite of the year for 2023. So many candidates to choose from. The nominations were very tight, but there was a clear winner, and I think you're going to agree with who it is. First, though, we've got one of my very favorite writers and people joining me right here. Maureen Callahan of the Daily Mail, and it's a great day for Maureen.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Got Jeffrey Epstein, Meghan Markle, Mehdi Hasan. He's fired. Well, out. Plus, the Golden Globes last night. So much to get to. Maureen, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, Meghan.
Okay, but we have to start with Lloyd Austin.
Yes, please.
The MIA defense secretary, who now we learn that he was completely out of commission. He had some sort of elective procedure a week ago and something went wrong. Mm-hmm. It got infected. They're not telling us what the procedure was, but something went wrong to the point where on New Year's Day, he had to go into the intensive care unit and no one knew. The National Security Advisor didn't know. The White House didn't know. And while they're now saying that the Deputy Defense Secretary was told, she was in Puerto Rico sunning herself on the beach. No one domestically was here and in charge. And there's a real question about whether we were endangered for the past week because the defense secretary was too embarrassed to tell people he had some sort of a procedure that went wrong.
I am amazed that this is considered something voluntary.
Right.
Is it that you have a job of this import? And the world is on fire. Biden is off sunning himself in the Caribbean. Your number two is off sunning herself in Puerto Rico, does not know you're in the hospital, is just informed you're taking over for the moment. And we still don't know. We only learned this on Friday.
Right.
So the White House owes the American people quite an explanation for how all of this went down. I've also read reports that the White House has said somebody's head is going to roll, but it won't be Austin's and it won't be his number two. So who will it be?
Well, here's what's crazy. They're saying that it was Austin's chief of staff, I think it was, who was responsible for telling everybody at the Pentagon that this was going down. But she was ill. She wasn't feeling well, Maureen.
Well, you know, there is something going around, Megan. Really stubborn.
There are 30,000 people at the Pentagon. They couldn't find one person to make a phone call for her that the White House was briefed.
You're also telling me this guy did not have access to his phone, was not checking email. I mean, how many of us can go for an hour without our phone? We're not the head of security.
This is suspicious. That's the bottom line. This is suspicious. There's no way both Austin and his spokesperson or chief of staff, I've got to look up which one it was so incapacitated to the point where they couldn't communicate the fact that he was in the intensive care unit while we have all this stuff happening in the Middle East, Ukraine. You know, our troops are getting involved now in the Red Sea, and they couldn't bother. There's something suspicious. Something's definitely going on. And that's what's leading people to say they've got to do something. Yeah, it was chief of staff who did not get in touch with anybody at the Pentagon other than one phone call to the deputy. But there is a duty to let the chain of command know. The national security advisor should have been advised. The president should have been advised.
There's no question. There's no question. You know, Colin Powell went in 2003 for prostate cancer for an operation. That's not nearly as, you know, grave. It didn't put him in the ICU, but he alerted everyone who needed to know. And there were processes in place in case something happened. This is how an orderly system of government works. And I think that the problem going forward is going to be this all blends into the narrative that we've got a White House being run by somebody who is napping half of the time.
Yes, that's exactly right. He's been absentee, right? I mean, it's where's the leadership? You have to imagine, first of all, the press coverage of this whole thing would be very different had it been Trump and Trump's Secretary of Defense.
That person would have a five-figure book deal.
Yeah, true. That's exactly right. And the media would have been absolutely unforgiving. Second of all, you have to imagine that somebody's going to have to get fired. I mean, because what we're hearing right now is reports out of the White House that Biden spoke with Austin and said, gee, I hope you feel better. Look forward to you getting back to work at the Pentagon, that he's not going to be the one to get fired. How can he not be fired? How can it? I'm sure he likes Lloyd Austin. Lloyd Austin made a screw up the level of Saturn. And if there's no accountability, someone's going to pay politically, and that person's probably going to be Joe Biden.
Yes, rightly so. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you don't punish Austin for this. I don't, you know, there's reports that he was very close to Beau Biden, and this sort of seems to be Biden's Achilles heel. Those around him who are close to him who aren't up to what they should be capable of, or they are dragging him down in some way, see Hunter, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And he sort of seems to operate with this sort of like mafia-like kind of loyalty towards those who maybe are dead weight. I mean, this is if the White House press room is not on fire this afternoon,
right,
about this, if everyone from every outlet, left, center, right, is not pressing the White House press secretary as to what happened, how, where is Austin now? What did he have? How is his recovery going? Who is in charge? What if something happened last week?
Yeah. They're saying they don't want to reveal what the original procedure was that went south and landed him a couple days later in the ICU, because the administration is saying because, you know, of HIPAA. Okay. With Alter, I don't give a shit about HIPAA. I give a shit about what's happening in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And me and my kids.
Yeah.
And my country.
Yeah.
And why we weren't being protected, because Lloyd, I don't know, now that not telling us is only going to lead to speculation about hair transplants, penile implants, weight loss surgery. That's what the internet's doing right now.
Sure.
He should just tell us. It would be far less embarrassing.
Of course, you have a duty. There's a reason you don't have to tell your viewers every year that you passed a physical.
Yeah,
and
right,
that you are cognitively intact. But yeah, the president of the United States must do so.
Yeah.
And we all see what we see. We see a president who is not cognitively intact. We see a president who does not have the energy. And this is going to help Trump. All of this.
Yeah.
You know, there was that report that Obama had a come to Jesus meeting with Biden and his top advisors and said, you got to get energized.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take this seriously.
The Obama camp is very worried about the direction of the Biden campaign.
They should be.
Yeah.
They should be. And they're sleepwalking right into a—
Well, think about it. The most devastating moment in Biden's presidency thus far was definitely August of 21, the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Yes.
Involving the same player.
Yes.
And what did it show? Weakness, fecklessness by the sitting commander in chief. And now here we are again, where his right-hand man, when it comes to national defense, has completely blown him off and disrespected the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
That's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was close to Beau, or for some other, because he likes the guy.
Right.
He's now going to give him a pass. At least that's what the administration's first telegraph has been, that they spoke, that Biden was very chummy with him and says he's looking forward to him coming back. If we don't see heads roll over this, and it really needs to be Lloyd Austin's head. I'm sorry. With all due respect, I'm sure he's a nice man. I don't care. It feeds into the narrative that this is a feckless commander in chief who let us once again be vulnerable and exposed because he doesn't, for one thing, scare anybody.
I think two things. Maybe we should get Bill Ackman on this.
Yes.
Number two, you're absolutely right. That withdrawal from Afghanistan sent the world a very clear message, which is that we are back on our heels. We're becoming a bit more isolationist. We don't really care. We botched it so badly. And it's no accident that ever since then, that region of the world has been on fire. And there is a part of this country that I used to think that if it were Trump Biden in 2024, it would be Biden by a hair. But now I really think it might be Trump.
Yep.
And I think it might be Trump because we know that the world no longer fears us. And that is a terrifying place to be.
Yeah. At least with Trump, we had the advantage of, because after 8 years of Obama, they did not fear us. Mm-hmm. Yes, he took out bin Laden, but come on, any sitting president would have unleashed that mission if given the data that we were given by that CIA woman.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, after 8 years of Obama, I don't know that they feared us. Then Trump got in there, and whether they feared us or just feared his instability, which was a smart fear given what we did to Soleimani,
mm-hmm.
it worked to our advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go back to Biden, where we gave the farm away nearly as soon as he took office, and we've never recovered. We've never recovered from it. And now this just plays into the whole narrative that he's absentee. He was disrespected by his Secretary of Defense. And for the sake of the nation, he can't allow it. And Lloyd may be a very nice guy. I hope whatever procedure he had works out to Lloyd's advantage and he recovers from the ICU stay. But he has got to go. So we'll see. And the campaign is another hot mess, which we will get to. Oh, hold on a second. One second. We got some news coming in on this. Oh, this is from the White House gaggle, where they get to shout questions at the administration. This is to John Kirby, who's, the guy they put in when they need a serious answer, not Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yeah.
There was just a report last week that Karine Jean-Pierre hates him.
I'll bet.
Right. Get better, and then they won't need him. Okay, the question, does the president know what elective surgery Austin has, even though the American people do not know? Kirby, I don't know the level of the president's personal knowledge of this medical situation. Should the American people have confidence in Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, given his lack of transparency? Karine Jean-Pierre also was there. The president continues to have complete confidence. Last but not least, John Kirby, on Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin being incapacitated for days without telling anyone, quote, as you might expect, we'll take a look at process and procedure here and try to learn from this experience.
And hope it blows over or some other story dominates the news cycle and we can just sweep this away. It's shocking. The other thing I was thinking about while you were talking about Biden and this sense that, everything feels asleep at the wheel is you conflate all of this. I was listening to Governor Abbott this weekend on one of the Sunday shows and the crisis at the border and what's going on in New York and New Jersey, where they're shipping migrants here. And it's just, this contributes, I think, to this entire sense that this administration is chaos. It is chaos. Nobody is in control. You are 100% right.
Yep.
If you had a number two who just sort of took off for a week and didn't tell you, and then it turned out they were in the hospital, It turned out they were gravely ill, you're in the ICU for a reason, and you don't know. And as president, you say that there are reasons that that would be acceptable.
Right. And then you say, why didn't anybody tell me? And the guy says, oh, I told my chief of staff to tell you. And well, why didn't she? Well, she didn't feel well. I see. And therefore, she didn't think it was okay to tell the president of the United States. She couldn't manage it. Like, think of the sickest you've ever been. Right. Unless she was also in the ICU.
Right.
It's totally and utterly inexcusable. And even then, he would have known that and he would have told somebody else, make sure that the NSA is involved. Make sure the White House knows there's something else happening here. I'll give you a couple quotes from Mark Thiessen, who I love. He's at AEI now, but he used to work for the Secretary of Defense in the Bush administration. Among other questions he's asking, How is it that with hundreds of attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq, Syria, and the Red Sea, and wars raging in Europe and the Middle East, that the president and his top advisors went 3 days without speaking to the Secretary of Defense?
Point.
Right? He said, great, this is as point. Embarrassing for the White House as for the Secretary of Defense. Like, good point. Why aren't we in touch with the SecDef while all this stuff is going down? And does it raise real questions about, really, again, who is at the wheel?
Is anybody? Does anybody? I mean, do you? All I have a sense of in terms of this administration and their engagement with the Israeli-Palestinian crisis is that they would like Israel to dial it back. That's all we really know.
That's right.
That is astonishing to me. We still have at least 8 American hostages, I believe, over there. Mm-hmm. 140 hostages in total. And it seems like the world now just shrugs.
That's the perfect transition. And it's a weird one, but it works, to the Golden Globes last night.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I both know, how many of these have we sat through where we saw the little Ukrainian ribbon, or we saw the pink ribbon, mm-hmm. or we saw the black ribbon for Me Too?
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't muster one. Right? Like, where was the massive outpouring of support and speeches for what's happened to Israelis and to the 8 Americans who are still being held?
Nothing. It was shocking to me. You know, with Me Too, remember all those actresses dressed up in black that year? And last year, the sort of chic cause was refugees. And a lot of people wore blue ribbons.
Right.
Just world refugees, no matter the political strife, right. what have you.
Right. Just in general. Just
in general, refugees, we're pro them. Okay. Israel. There was a great report in the Ankler in the weeks and months leading up to the Globes, which is already kind of on life support in terms of cultural relevancy. Were these actors and actresses going to wear yellow ribbons in support of Israel or in support of the hostages? And this was a major crisis. A major crisis.
The debate.
The debate. And what you saw last night was nothing.
Right.
Nothing. You know, think about like Meryl Streep. You know, remember, I forget whether it was before or after Trump was elected, but she got up and she gave this huge speech about bullies.
Yep.
And she was applauded like the second coming. Not a word last night. Not a word. It just, it tells you everything.
I feel like most of them, maybe I'm just being too optimistic in the face of all the anti-Semitism we've seen, but I feel like most of them are probably pro-Israel, more pro-Israel than they are pro, you know, Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
But they're fucking cowards. Excuse me. But they are just cowards. They're afraid. They don't want the shitstorm coming down on them that rained down on one of the Kardashians, Kylie, when she tried to tweet out support for Israel.
Right.
Even before Israel started its retaliation campaign.
Right.
She was too afraid to leave it up.
Right.
And these Hollywood people are totally spineless. So they were afraid to take a stance, unless publicly, it's going to have to be something like what Taylor Swift did, which is to raise money for the Palestinians, not the Israelis.
Yeah, I know. It's so strange. You know, one of the biggest films that's nominated and will be an Oscar contender as well is called Zone of Interest. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Is this the one about the Holocaust?
Yes. Yeah. It's loosely based on a Martin Amis novel. And it's about a chief SS officer who lives with his family right next door to a concentration camp. So it's sort of the banality of evil. And this is an industry that loves to tell the story of the Holocaust and World War II over and over and over again as a kind of never again thing. And there is value in that. But you also have to ask, where is the moral and ethical integrity when we're seeing a second Holocaust and nobody will stand up in the moment? Mm-hmm. This is a group of people who signed an open letter in support of Roman Polanski.
Oh, my God. You're right. I forgot about that.
But this is too much of a third rail. It's one of those moments in the culture where you feel a bit, I feel very queasy.
They'll exploit the pain and the history of Jewish people like that for a dime. To make
and awards.
Money. Right. And awards. But when push comes to shove and Jews are actually being killed and being treated like third class citizens here in America, after their people were murdered, their babies were murdered, they can't muster the courage to wear a freaking ribbon. It's disgusting. That's why nobody wants to watch these shows. They know these are terrible people, Maureen. It's not just that they're whatever, they're actors. Maybe you don't care. They're not good people.
Well, here's a documentary they might want to consider for consideration next year. How about the 47 minute long piece of footage put together by the Israeli military?
Oh, wow.
That details what went on that day. And it was taken from body cam footage from the terrorists, from first responders, iPhone footage from survivors and people who did not make it. And I'll tell you, that piece of film is an incredibly well done story, front to back. It starts by putting you, the viewer, in the driver's seat of somebody's just average car on a Saturday morning, driving down a highway. And before they can even realize what they're seeing is a convoy of terrorists in front of them, bullets start smashing through. And you go through the entire day. And this tells a narrative in a way that leaves no question what went on, who is in the right, who is in the wrong. And this is a film, I think, that should be required viewing for anybody who wants to weigh in and talk about what's going on in Gaza instead.
That's why they won't. They won't nominate it and they won't show it. Last year, they let Volodymyr Zelensky appear.
Great point.
At the Golden Globe. Can you imagine if Bibi Netanyahu? They would never
invite
Bibi's
him. Well, Bibi's not in SAG, right? Isn't Zelensky a former comic actor?
No, they would never. I mean, honestly, like far cry from that. They couldn't even muster the ribbon. So it's disgusting. And we know who they are. All right. But there were a couple of moments worth discussing. There was a guy named Joy Coy, who was the host. You know, the past years we had Ricky Gervais, which was amazing. We've had others. Joy Coy got pulled out there. Sorry, Joe. And Joe was only hired like, I don't know, 10 days ago. Is that true?
Is that a date you would accept? Like if you're asked 10 days before the Globes, like, you know, you're on the very bottom of that list.
No.
Because a lot of people pass.
Sometimes I do public speaking, you know, like to groups. If they call me like within 2 weeks, I'm like, screw you. No, I know very well how you got to me. The answer is no.
Well, you have self-esteem, apparently. But this guy, and so he bombed, he fell on his face. And then apparently during the monologue, he blamed the writers for not giving him good enough material.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
Which again, you know, you can't.
Here's a little sample of him trying to be funny in Sat 4.
The key moment in Barbie is when she goes from perfect beauty to bad breath, cellulite, and flat feet. Or what casting directors call character actor. Some I wrote, some other people wrote. Robert De Niro's here. Yo, I got the gig 10 days ago. You want a perfect monologue? Yo,
yeah,
shut up. You're kidding me, right? Down. I wrote some of these, and they're the ones you're laughing at. Look, Robert De Niro's here. I'm sorry. I'm a fan. I'm fanning out. I love you, Robert. Okay? If it's awkward, I'm sorry. Your last performance has got to be your greatest performance ever. How'd you get her pregnant at 80? CGI.
I don't even get it. I don't get a character actor with a... Was he
flat
saying
feet.
Margot Robbie has bad breath and flat... Is that what he's... Like, what?
Is he saying that it's what character actors do is sort of uglify themselves, or they're already not that attractive? I don't get it.
These losers of Hollywood that just play random roles as opposed to the star. I don't understand any of it. If I have to work this hard to understand it, it's not funny.
100%. Yeah.
So he was their choice and he didn't go over well. And one of the moments that's getting a lot of attention is he made a joke about Taylor Swift, which was fine. I actually thought he was spot on with the commentary. She did not appreciate it. Here's what happened.
As you know, we came on after a football doubleheader. The big difference between the Golden Globes and the NFL, on the Golden Globes, we have fewer camera shots of Taylor Swift. I swear, there's just more to go to here. Sorry about that.
So, can't she just like show that she's a good sport, right? I think she made the wrong move.
I felt the same way. I thought, wow, if we needed any further proof that she has no sense of humor about herself, and this will be a revenge song in whatever her next magnum opus is.
Oh, for the listening audience, she looked angry and she took a sip of her drink.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Death glare. I thought it was funny. Come on.
Yes, come on.
Come on. You're at the Golden Globes. Your movie made, you're in a category because your movie made over $150 million at the box office. No small feat post-COVID. You know, come on. This is what bothers people. You know, this room full of multimillionaires who are the most privileged, who cannot take a swipe. It's what made Ricky
Gervais. Gentle.
Yeah,
it was a gentle swipe. And by the way, I mean, she's not in charge of the number of times the NFL chooses to put her on cam. That's not her fault. It is annoying. And if she were smart, she would laugh like she was in on the joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've told the audience I'm still listening to Barbara Streisand's memoir. It's almost 1,000 pages and I have a life to live. But one of the things they revisit in the book is The Way We Were, which of course, you know, we've all seen with Robert Redford.
Yes.
And I had forgotten. I went back and watched it. And I had forgotten that scene in the opening part of the movie where she's like this activist on campus and she's supporting communism. She's a pinko commie.
Mm-hmm.
And she's up there, you know, saying everybody else should too. And they make some crude joke behind her, like, Katie. And it's something about like, everyone's tried Katie's piece or something like that. It's something a little off color. And she gets angry. She was winning the crowd over and then she gets angry and she loses them.
Yeah.
And later Hubble, Robert Redford, says to her, you should have laughed. And she said, it wasn't funny. And he says, that it's funny is not the only reason to laugh at something.
Yes. Yes. You have to show a sense of humor and a sense of humility about yourself. Taylor Swift is not above a minor little fly swat here or there. She has been dominating the culture for the past year. She has been given laurel upon laurel. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem.
Right. If I had been her advisor, I would have said, you should laugh and maybe even do like a face plant, like, oh, I'm embarrassed, you know?
Yes.
Because to show I didn't really want that, but I'm dating an NFL football player, like something to communicate, you get it. It's been a bit much. That looked like, how dare you question me and my popularity?
Yes.
User.
Yes. Yes. I wonder what her reaction would have been like had it been somebody not sort of so much lower on the totem pole.
Oh, like a Ricky Gervais.
Or a Chris Rock, you know, where you would have to sort of go along to get along.
That's a good point. Maybe that's what she thought. Well, one of the people who's above most of the guys in that room is Jim Gaffigan, at least in terms of the numbers who download his specials. And he got up there and he got an award for like best host of something, best comedy host. He beat out Sarah Silverstein and many others. And made a jab that was very on point, given everything that's coming out right now about Jeffrey Epstein and his connections with, you know, all these big names. Here's what he said.
The Golden Globes. I mean, I can't even believe I'm in the entertainment industry. I can't. It's so unlikely. I'm from a small town in Indiana. I'm not a pedophile. You know? I mean,
back to your reference of Roman Polanski.
Yeah.
And just all the Epstein stuff we've seen and his hobnobbing with people in power. Now, it wasn't all Hollywood. It was a lot of politicians, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that took guts. You got to give him credit.
That was great. He should have been the host.
Yeah. I'm sure they begged him. He's
probably
a much bigger name than Joe Coy.
Probably. And he doesn't need to do it. And he's so underrated, Jim Gaffigan. But that reminded me, there was that year after Harvey was exposed. Was it the Globes or the Oscars? Somebody made a joke about Harvey, about how bad it was to rape women, essentially.
Yeah.
And the camera cut to Tom Hanks and he made a face.
He disapproved of the joke?
He disapproved of the joke.
Oh, come on.
Like, how dare you sort of impugn I guess it was probably the rest of us in this room, right? Who probably knew all along and
we impugn
our mouths shut. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no. That was a bridge too far for Mr. Nice Guy Tom Hanks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's shocking. All right. So Steve's telling me it was Ricky Gervais who made
the
comment. Of course, Ricky, the fearless Ricky Gervais. One of the other low points of the evening was the honoring of Dylan Mulvaney on the red carpet. Why was he there? They never miss an opportunity. Look at this. This is a man. This is a man, once again, trying to impersonate a woman and being rewarded richly for it. I think his speaking fees are now up to like $30,000 to $50,000 a gig. And look at him. this is a guy. And they all go along with it. They call him she. And there hasn't been an awards ceremony or a big sort of red carpet event that they haven't invited him to, Maureen. I am sick of seeing his face. There was a post on Twitter where somebody said, Dylan Mulvaney turns heads at the Golden Globes. And Kelly J. Keen retweeted it saying, stomachs, you mean?
Dylan Mulvaney, that's surprising to me. I don't know why the Globes felt they needed Dylan.
You don't?
Vice versa. Well, actually, I take that back. You're right. I do. I should have just assumed why. It's so disheartening because this is sort of on the heels of Riley Gaines going before Congress and just advocating for biological females in sport. That's it. It's very simple. And this was right around the time we saw a 50-year-old man competing against 13-year-old girls.
Yes, he's an otter. He's on the otters up there in Canada.
Right. And so this is what we're sort of valorizing. Just
Melody
blanket.
Wisehart. That was his fake name is Melody Wisehart.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got that one right here.
Wisehart. Yeah.
Sure, Melody.
Oh, boy. But yeah, so this is what we valorize instead. You know, and it really does speak to the sort of binary thinking in terms of what causes the industry deems valid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trans activism, I think, being completely you're pro. There's no room for nuanced debate. And it's the same with Israel. We're seeing it's again, I don't know what we really expect.
But on that theme, which we talked about how they're feckless and they're not fearless. They're filled with fear.
Yeah.
That's why they won't say anything about the missing American hostages, the Israelis who are still in custody, the women who have been sexually abused repeatedly before they were murdered, these terrorists playing with their breasts, shooting them, forgive me for the casual reference, but in the vagina repeatedly as to murder them. They won't, that doesn't deserve a damn ribbon. At the Golden Globes. They can't muster that, right? But you can parade Dylan Mulvaney out there because that's brave.
Right.
That's allyship. The same thing with Me Too. You're going to stand by women who have been sexually assaulted there. Okay, but not in Israel, right? Got it. Even if it's American women because they happen to be in Israel. Got it. And the Dylan Mulvaney thing is a fuck you to women. He is a middle finger to women. His 100 Day of Girlhood, his Barbie apparatus, his Eloise act where he looks like a little girl. All of it is a middle finger to us. So if you want to stand up for women, you really do stand by women. You don't have to go out there and rip on him like I do all the time. And I've seen you write about, you just don't invite him. Don't put him up there like he's a cause celeb.
Right. I mean, that reminds me of also the Nike endorsement where he was in the backyard and sort of acting like a female athlete would act, but sort of like
in need
prancing,
of a bra.
In need of a sports bra. You know, which like, again, it's amazing to me that Nike survived that backlash. That, you know, Bud Light's a whole different animal. But to try to appeal to female athletes shilling sports bras, but you've got a man
with
in
a
them.
Man.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
This is, I mean, a very small sliver of the population to whom they mean to appeal. And I'm like, they moved on from that one pretty quickly. Okay, much more to get to. We're going to take a quick break and then much more with Maureen. Don't go away.
If a friend asks how you're doing and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
The Claudine Gay forced resignation from the presidency at Harvard is still making news. And over the weekend, it led to this debate on, I guess now they're using Chris Wallace after his Look Who's Talking to Chris Wallace show completely and utterly failed. They're turning him back to politics because he was on CNN doing a political clip that I saw. And it involved Kara Swisher, who used to write for The New York Times, and this woman, Lulu Garcia Navarro, who's from The New York Times, against Jonah Goldberg and Rehan Salam, who's with the Manhattan Institute. And this woman, Lulu Garcia Navarro from The New York Times, is, as it turns out, an hysteric. We cut just a little bit for you on how upset she is that Claudine Gay had to go.
in some cases, you have groups that are overrepresented, and that can be okay. You know, the point that J.D. Vance was making about the Dallas Mavericks is that it can be good and healthy and reasonable in some domains to have overrepresentation.
Ridiculo.
Underrepresentation can also be.
This is, excuse me. This is the burden, and I can't tell you how infuriating I find it. This is the burden that always comes with representation. It was an ideological, very well-funded.
The motives of the attack don't change the fact that you plagiarized. And where I disagree with you, Kara, is when you say...
When somebody fails who's white and who's a man... Let me finish.
Actually, you just heard her interrupt him. Right. Maureen, it was ridiculo.
I love that. I love the rolled R. I love it.
Just in case you were wondering, I'm a Latinx is basically what that rolled R meant.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or is it Latinx? I never know.
It goes either way.
Oh, does it?
But I've chosen to go with Latinx because it's extra absurd.
Well, you're unlike the Latin community, which hates that term.
Yes, I'm
never
the one
uses
who loves it.
But allyship, Megan. It's important. So yes, Claudine Gay, this is amazing to me. This is, so John McWhorter in the Times today had another great piece.
He's
for those
amazing.
Who might not be familiar. He is a Black professor of linguistics at Columbia, and he wrote a book called Woke Racism, and he is amazing. He wrote another piece ratifying why Claudine Gay had to go and sort of just shredding to ribbons this notion that her ouster was the direct result of work by conservative activists mm-hmm. and ideologues to get a Black woman out of a premium perch in academia. And he gave several examples to refute this idea. And I kind of am obsessed with the long tail that this story is having.
Right, it is.
It really is. You would think like once she was gone, we might have exercised ourselves of this, but we haven't. And that's telling us something about ourselves. I'm not quite sure what it is yet, whether it's just how divided we remain or how we're so entrenched in these camps and we cannot have a nuanced conversation. And the other thing, and I wonder what you make of this, because we've been talking about the plagiarism now for like a couple of weeks. I almost feel like that's moved the goalposts. We're not discussing the anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. which to me is the far more grave offense.
That's a good point. I think people are more comfortable on the plagiarism. She could have been fired just for the comments she made before Congress, like mm-hmm. Liz McGill was. Mm-hmm. A white woman. Hello.
Great point.
She wasn't. Once again, if anything, she had more chances afforded to her than her white counterpart over at Penn. People moved on quickly because the Palestinian lobby has gotten so strong in the United States and has so many supporters among the woke young Democrats in particular. It's become politically risky, right? So even her centrist detractors, the right, wanted her gone for the obvious reason. She wasn't qualified and we knew it. But the centrist sort of leftists were like, I shouldn't make it about Israel. I can see we don't have support there. So let's go with the plagiarism thing. To me, it was just like it was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And what's been very telling, I forgot to mention that it was Axios on the Lloyd Austin scandal that had a tweet saying it was, again, Republicans pounce. Literally was like, Republicans make the most of or jump on the scandal. That's not the story, Axios.
It's not.
The story is about Lloyd Austin. But the question is, why aren't you pouncing? But here, again, there's so many people who are writing about like the story in a way that doesn't quite capture what actually happened. And the plagiarism stuff has given an opportunity to the people who want to back Claudine Gay to go after the people who pushed her the most, who pushed the story the most, including Bill Ackman. That leads me to the story that dominated X over the past few days. I think it was Thursday or Friday. Bill Ackman is this billionaire who's married to a woman from Israel. I didn't realize his wife was Israeli. And he's been very critical of those three university presidents and of DEI. Mm-hmm. He's one of those leftists. I think he's a lefty or a centrist at least, who's seen the light on DEI. So what happens? Business Insider does a hit piece on his wife, who was a tenured professor at MIT. And when she did her dissertation in 2010, mm-hmm. apparently there were a few examples in there where she didn't use quotation marks, though right at the end of the sentence, she did a citation. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like me quoting a Maureen quote.
Right.
And at the end of the sentence, I put Maureen Callahan, Daily Mail, but I didn't put the quotes
right
around your words.
Right.
And they give him a very short turnaround time to respond to the Business right. Insider and so on. They dropped a hit piece. She plagiarized. Then Bill Ackman and his wife got back to them saying, we should have put quotation marks. She should have. And that's been corrected and moved on. Then the next headline, admits she plagiarized.
Right.
And then came a third where they're now looking back on years earlier in which she apparently used information from Wikipedia yeah. without citing Wikipedia. And she's saying, I just looked up defined terms like let's say 3D printing mm-hmm. and took the definition I found at Wikipedia. How is that plagiarism? Like, mm-hmm. since when do we cite Wikipedia as our, I'm just looking for common definitions of words that everybody uses. This is her defense. I haven't looked into any of this. But the point is, they're trying to ruin his wife. She's not involved in this in any way. Bill Ackman is just like a billionaire who got interested in this story and the fraud that was committed by Claudine and the anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And now it's all in on people's families
right.
as fair game, according to Business Insider.
What right. And she's, well, she's not the head of the top university in the world.
Right. And she's no longer at MIT.
She's no longer at MIT. She hasn't been at MIT for years. Listen, it's not a great look.
Yep.
It's not. And people despise hypocrisy. I am among them. But I think, you know, Business Insider announced that they're going to conduct an investigation into how this story wound up there. Apparently, it had been peddled
them.
Around.
MIT gave it to you. It's obvious to those of us on the outside. There, I did your investigation for you.
Thanks. So, you know, I really don't know what to make of it. You know, I think it feels petty. I think it feels vengeful. I think there is a segment of this country that is still so aggrieved by what happened to Claudine Gay, who, let's be clear, is keeping her professorship at Harvard,
yeah, yeah.
is hauling in $900,000 a year, and will probably, despite her history of plagiarism, get a book deal.
Yeah. Oh, I'm
and
sure.
go on the speaking circuit and have a very lucrative future. So I have a couple thoughts on this.
So Bill Ackman, okay, he defended his wife because she was under attack. I think one defense is enough. And then I think you move on.
Yeah.
He's really doubling down on it and tripling down on it and quadrupling down on it. He's very defensive of her, which I appreciate as a mm-hmm. wife myself. Like, you like to see a man defend his woman. However, they're trying to distract him. And to go too far down this lane is to take the bait. No one gives a shit about his wife. With all due respect to Bill Ackman and his wife.
You're right.
We don't care about her.
You're right.
She's not the president of a university. And he's getting distracted from the main, like, focus on the main mission, which he's winning. And the same, Chris Rufo's more, he's like a dog with a bone. He's very tough to distract. But for the record, they did go after him too, because on his resume, I guess he says, which is posted publicly, that he went to Georgetown undergrad. He's another one who really pushed and did a great job outing Claudine Gay's plagiarism. Uh-huh. He said he went to Georgetown undergrad and got his master's at Harvard. Well, it turns out he didn't really go to Harvard. He went to something called the Harvard Extension School, which is, I guess you just pay to get in. It's not like you have to be admitted like you or I would have to apply.
Right.
So it's not the same as Harvard.
Right.
Which was disclosed by Rufo in something I saw he posted online before this, saying mm-hmm. it's far less difficult to get into than the real Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if you go there, you're supposed to call it an ALM, not a master's. And he had called, okay, whatever. I don't care about any of these Harvard people, to be honest with you. However, it's another attempt. Like, the left is very good at what they do. And for 3 days, they've been driving the news with Bill Ackman's wife is also a plagiarist and Chris Rufo lied about going to Harvard. And everybody on X is like, yes, let's do this. This is the debate we've been dying to have, not about how fraudulent our university leaders are and how half of them got there because of DEI. It's not that they're being fired because of their race. It's that they were hired because of it.
100%. And Claudine Gay was given a much longer amount of time in that seat because of her race. They couldn't fire her immediately because she was a Black woman.
Yeah.
That's what was going on. And nobody really wants to just say it. And I think that you're 100% right that Bill Ackman is sort of losing the thread here. He's doing really good stuff and that the left is sort of ginning this up. So what is the consequence? Claudine Gay was a consequential figure
yeah.
who needed a consequential action because it mattered. What does it matter what Bill Ackman's wife
no one
is
cares.
Doing?
She's in private industry now.
Right.
She's a designer. She designs furniture. And she's brilliant. She does it in some weird, cool way. But
right.
No one cares about her. And the other problem is, you know, the Bill Ackmans of the world have to think about this. No one wants to spend a lot of time defending a billionaire's wife who's incredibly beautiful, who dated Brad Pitt. That's mm-hmm. just the reality. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of those you defend once and then you move on, because Madge, sitting in Iowa, like, she cares a little. She sees what the media is doing, but she does not want to spend 5 days on that woman and how aggrieved she is. So this is just the reality of life and humanity. And I really think conservative activists or new to the anti-DEI cause activists like Bill, and I certainly welcome him to the fight, need to understand how this works. They'll never let up. You can rehabilitate your wife till the cows come home. They'll find another way to attack you, your company. Don't take the bait. Offense. Forward. If it's really egregious, you spend maybe a day saying, that's bullshit. I love my wife. Stay away from her. There's no point in getting distracted, because the left is experienced and expert at what it does in destroying people.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, we'll see if Bill Ackman listens to me. He has billions of dollars and I don't. So it's very possible he will move right on. Okay. I want to get into so much more, including Jeffrey Epstein. So all this news has broken about Jeffrey Epstein over the past 5 days, because Virginia Giuffre, one of the main women who was, she was his victim. She was sex trafficked by Epstein. She's made a bunch of allegations. And listen, I've covered this case very carefully. Not all of them are true. Virginia Giuffre is a problematic witness. But in this defamation case she filed against Ghislaine Maxwell, his right-hand woman, in 2015, another one of Jeffrey Epstein's victims gave a deposition. And that testimony was full of info. And from that deposition testimony, we're now learning a lot of stuff, because it was just unsealed by a court. First of all, from the things that you've seen so far, what's your takeaway? What do you find the most interesting?
Prince Andrew and Bill Clinton, to me, are by far the most interesting. If we're talking about the same part of that court filing, there was a young woman known as Jane Doe 3.
That's another one. Yes, that's another one.
Who said that she was forced into having sexual encounters with Andrew in 3 separate locations. Once in London at Ghislaine Maxwell's apartment, once in New York, and the third time on Epstein's private island, colloquially known as Pedophile Island. And she was underage at the time and forced to participate in an orgy with numerous underage girls with Andrew. Now, last week we heard that Scotland Yard was going to open an investigation into Andrew, who has said more than once he would be willing to help investigations in any way, that he would like to help the victims get closure. Closure's bullshit, whatever. First of all, where is he?
Yeah, then
with
do
his
it.
Help it. And all of his resources. And secondly, I read this morning that there is going to be no investigation into Andrew whatsoever. And I think a slap on the wrist from King Charles, you know, pulling his security detail and trying to kick him out of Frogmore Cottage, simply isn't going to cut it. And I the same to me, I don't understand why Bill Clinton is just photographed on vacation in Mexico without a care in the world the same day the story breaks. He was consorting with a guy that everybody knew was doing this. Everybody knew. I did this column last week and I quoted Cindy McCain, who was giving a speech about human trafficking, or she was in conversation and it aired on C-SPAN. And she said out loud, we all knew.
Right.
And it leads people to think, yes, there is an Illuminati. They're all involved. They all protect each other.
Yep.
There are rules for thee, not for me.
Well, two of the names that were mentioned in the deposition were Michael Jackson had visited Epstein. David Copperfield had visited Epstein and had reportedly said to one of the women, are you aware that he has girls go out and find other girls? And so this led to the Jim Gaffigan comment, right?
Like right.
This Hollywood politics, it's full of guys that have a thing for underage or quote young girls, and we seem to just be willing to be like, ha ha ha, it's Bill Clinton, he he he, move on. All right, wait, speaking of moving on, I'm going to move on here. I'm going to squeeze in one quick break and we're going to come back, because we're not done with Jeffrey Epstein, There's a lot more to discuss. Maureen stays with us. Don't go away.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.
When Tillamook ice cream beckons you to the freezer aisle, which irresistibly creamy flavor do you choose? While you're thinking, try not to fuck up the glass. Tillamook ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Coming up, the executive director of Stop Antisemitism will be here to reveal the organization's Antisemite of the Year. Do you have any guesses on who it might be? Maureen Callahan is here now. She's not it. She's not an anti-Semite. That text was a little too close to each other in the prompter. She's with the Daily Mail, and we continue our conversation now on Jeffrey Epstein. So there are a lot of people who are worried about the reveal in these documents because, mm-hmm. I don't know why, because they're guys who went to the island or they knew Jeffrey Epstein or they ignored the warnings about him. And that led to this weird exchange between Aaron Rodgers and Jimmy Kimmel about a week and a half ago, where Aaron Rodgers suggested Jimmy Kimmel doesn't want the Epstein list to come out for personal reasons. Here's what he said on the Pat McAfee show, which then I guess Pat McAfee apologized for because Jimmy Kimmel threatened to sue. Here's what was said. Satu.
You have Super Bowl 58.
You'll see it.
The emblem put on the screen. And then bring up 57 and 56.
This has something to do with the Epstein list that came out?
Feels like
it's supposed to be coming out soon. A lot of people, including Jimmy Kimmel, are really hoping that doesn't
All right.
Okay. So Jimmy Kimmel was angry, threatened to sue, and then he reacted on his own show as follows. Sot 3.
Needless to say, all this UFO talk has the tinfoil hatters going wild, including Green Bay whack packer Aaron Rodgers, who offered this hot take on the Pat McAfee show.
I believe that this has been going on for a long time. Interesting timing on everything. There's a lot of other things going on in the world. Did you hear about the Epstein client list about to be released, too?
What's that? What are you talking about?
There's some files that have some names on it that might be getting released pretty soon.
Oh.
Oh. Might be time to revisit that concussion protocol, Aaron.
All right. So just to correct myself, the second soundbite was from March. The first soundbite was just from Tuesday. So in any event, the point is they've been going back and forth about this. Him, because Kimmel made pretty clear, like, he's not totally in favor of the lists and like the scuttlebutt around the lists,
mm-hmm.
and Aaron Rodgers kind of making the most of it. But
right.
If Kimmel does feel that way, he's not the only one. I mean, it seems like there are a lot of people who want this story to go away.
Yeah. It seems there are a lot of people on these lists, and it's weird because, you have these random names like Cameron Diaz and Naomi Campbell and Leonardo DiCaprio, and they're all saying they had nothing to do with him. Cameron Diaz's rep was vehement. And they're saying he was sort of a name dropper and he just sort of liked to imply that he had all these relationships with multiple people. His black book, which was published years ago, I believe in New York Magazine. I mean, like everybody was in that book.
It doesn't mean you liked sex with underage girls.
Exactly. Right, it doesn't mean you were soliciting massages or part of a sex trafficking ring or anything like that. The Kimmel thing was very strange to me. Like Aaron Rodgers sort of picking him out and saying, it's one of those things. Again, I think people feel like, what is the actual story? Who are the actual bad actors? People aren't flying on this guy's private plane, the Lolita Express, without knowing what's going on. And at what point is your association with him a sort of complicity mm-hmm. in what he's doing, especially if you happen to be a former president or a high-ranking royal who is being used, as the last dump showed us, I believe,
Epstein considered Andrew a, quote, useless idiot, mm-hmm. which is a great phrase, mm-hmm. To sort of just lure in bigger bait. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the latest reporting on him, is that he wasn't knowingly part of a sex trafficking ring. He was being used.
Right.
His name. It's like, you would think anybody that Prince Andrew back then, now we know, but back then, is hanging out with is fine. This is what Alan Dershowitz has said many times, that he was a Harvard law professor there, and that other people at Harvard were like, hey, meet Jeffrey Epstein. And then eventually, hey, Jeffrey Epstein needs representation. And I don't blame Alan for representing him at all. That's what criminal defense mm-hmm. lawyers do. They don't represent only the angels.
Right.
It's the nature of their job. Then this Virginia Giuffre wound up accusing Alan, among others. And Alan has vehemently denied all of that. And I do think he's one of those names who, like, he just gets swept in there with these others. And, you know, I don't know. Like, even Bill Clinton, I have to say, I believe he probably did like him young. How young? I don't know. Monica Lewinsky was young. Primary Colors suggests even younger than that, potentially. But to your point, might it be worth investigating when it's a former president, or when it's somebody like Prince Andrew, where there's actual testimony that it's been at least three times in three different locations, part of an orgy? Like, that is sex trafficking. These girls were trafficked, and they are very willing to walk right away from that now that he's settled it.
Yeah. Andrew. It makes you wonder what would have happened if Epstein hadn't committed suicide in prison. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand why these conspiracy theories abound, because there's been no sort of coalescing around this big mystery.
We don't feel like we're getting the straight skinny.
It's been years. And even with this document dump, we're still not really learning anything. There's nobody's being held to any account. You know, Ghislaine Maxwell, this is going to be it. You know, you can't tell me she doesn't know where bodies are buried, mm-hmm. but she's busy through her lawyer, you know, claiming that she's the victim, that of all these men who are so predatory, it's the woman who's in prison. Like, why don't you advocate then for these other girls and women?
Yeah.
If you really think that.
That's a good point. She could change that.
Yeah.
In other words, if she would name names.
She could change that narrative.
That's a good point. I'm going to ask Arthur Idala about that. He's her lawyer. Our pal Arthur Idala is representing her. So yeah, next time he comes on, I'll ask him. I don't know. I feel like we're not done with Epstein. We're going to get more documents today. Whether we ever get to the truth of what he actually did is another story. I know you've covered this for years. Mm-hmm. The thing about the Epstein accusers is, and I feel the need to say this, mm-hmm. some I do believe are credible and have been telling the truth, and not all are credible. There's like a cloud around the actual victims of people who want to cash in on the Epstein story. And it's difficult sometimes to tell who's who as a reporter covering the story.
Yeah, I mean, I was working on this at my former place of employment years and years ago, before Epstein really became this sort of lightning rod. And I was approached by a woman who claimed that she had been a victim. And she began telling me stories, and she claimed to me that she had hard evidence involving very major players, some of whom we've been discussing. And I said to her after multiple conversations, I will fly to you wherever these boxes are. And if you show them to me, then we can progress with this investigation. And multiple times she had myriad reasons why she couldn't do it. And so I dropped that thread. I completely abandoned it. Nothing was adding up. You also, as an investigative reporter covering something like this, have to sort of thread a needle, where if you're dealing with women and girls who claim they've been the victim of sexual assault, a kind of institutionalized sexual assault, you also have to realize you're probably dealing with people who are broken mm-hmm. to a large degree.
Yeah, so true.
So some of them may believe that what they're recalling is true, but is it? It's very, very difficult. And it's why these documents are going to remain a mess, I think, for the foreseeable future.
And you do, as a reporter, have to be careful, because I look at what happened, speaking of Dershowitz, there's an actual correspondence between one of these women who was in the Epstein orbit and said she was trafficked by him, and a reporter. And it's the reporter, I think she's a reporter, says to the alleged victim, name Dershowitz, use the name Dershowitz. He's powerful. And like the suggestion of his name came from someone other than the victim to be named and highlighted, because it would really get a lot of attention. So I also feel for some of these names, like, I don't know, just because the one Jane Doe says Prince Andrew was with her three, like,
Right.
I don't think Prince Andrew behaved well. There's no question to me about that. But whether he did this, look, we should look into it. There should be an actual investigation about it. And you're right. Ghislaine Maxwell and these others should help. While we're on the subject of the royals, Meghan Markle is at it again. She can't help herself. So according to royal expert and commentator Neil Sean, he says, he broke this story, that she is angry and wants answers from King Charles, according to the New York Post, over different rules for her and Harry versus others who have ditched royal life, like Fergie, Sarah, Duchess of York, that she is reportedly demanding answers from King Charles about why they've been subjected to a different set of rules, saying that she has tried to arrange a meeting with her father-in-law, King Charles, to discuss her concerns. She sent him a letter. She wants a one-to-one to explain exactly the problems that she has encountered ever since becoming a member of the British monarchy. It's so hard when they make you a household name across the globe. Life becomes so very difficult, and they give you a whole castle to live in, and you marry a prince, and your children have titles, and you live in a $20 million mansion in Montecito, and you get flown around on Tyler Perry's jet, and then they give you $150 at Netflix. She wants to tell him about her problems since she became a damn royal, Maureen. Life isn't fair.
I thought she was just on the red carpet teasing all these exciting new projects she had going on in Hollywood. I thought she had left all this behind.
She needs to be loved for it as well by the royals.
Does she? Or does she want to exist solely in opposition and be the aggrieved anti-heroine? Mm. And that's kind of where I think she sort of gets off a little bit. Like, it's very... It's sort of like somebody just rooting around in their own open wound. Mm. You know, if she didn't enjoy this, she would have moved on a long, long time ago. In what world does she think that the King of the United Kingdom is going to sit down one-on-one with her and not sweep her for bugs, right, and take the iPhone and worry about, like, notes she's going to take after that will go in the memoir? I mean, everybody knows their deal. Everybody knows what they're up to.
Yes.
What does she want?
And as far as Sarah, who's Andrew's ex-wife,
right,
she never says a negative word about the royal family, according to royal experts. I don't follow Sarah, Duchess of York, that closely, but the royal experts who I do watch say that she only has positive words. She loved the queen. She and the queen apparently got along very well. That the Duke of Edinburgh, the queen's deceased husband, he did not like her. So they kept her at arm's right. length. But she was never out there bashing the royal family. Exactly the opposite of what Meghan does. Why would they support her press tour when it's all about sticking the knife in their back?
This also really circles back very nicely to our very first conversation about the Globes, because Harry and Meghan were noticeably absent at the Globes. Mm-hmm. There was a crack made, I think maybe by the terrible host, but yes, it was about Harry and Meghan's year of sort of failure for Netflix, and like the camera caught Ted Sarandos laughing about it.
That they're getting paid hundreds of millions for their failures. And then he said something like, oh, but in fairness, that was from Netflix.
Right. And so you can imagine those two at home on the couch, just, you know, the anger rising.
The butt of the jokes.
The butt of the jokes. They're not even invited to the after parties. You know, they're not going to be at the Vanity Fair Oscar party. Like, this is all just going to sort of go into that stew, I think, of bile.
I love, they say she is furious that she and Harry get scrutinized for partaking in interviews and publicized projects while others receive no backlash and still use their royal titles, like Duchess of York in Fergie's case. They have their titles. They've got their titles. She uses it everywhere. On her stationery, she kept them titles for her kids. What is she complaining about? She just doesn't want the backlash. And you're right, she does need it, because when she was first accepted in the royal family and fast-tracked by the queen, she created these problems. She found things to be upset about. She created the rift with the royal family. Then she goes out there, calls them racists. Then he denies she ever did it. Then she calls the British people racists. Then they don't understand why people don't like them. Why don't we have the same rules as Fergie, who's not doing any of these things? To the end, these two are about rules for me and not for thee, or vice versa. All right, last but not least, we got to get to this. Actually, I might have time to squeeze two of these things in. I'm going to try. This is bold of me. I'll get to the one. Jonathan Capehart. Yeah. So he writes, does he write for the Times or the Post? One of the
two. I think it's the Washington Post.
Okay. Every piece is a post. It's a boo-hoo. It's very hard to be black. The white people are terrible. There's a long list of those. I mean, a long list. Well, he also is over on MSNBC. And, you know, because January 6th has become a national holiday that, like, literally the left celebrate. It's like, it's become like Pearl Harbor. It's like 9/11. They get together. They have, like, whatever. Even though the polls show most people want to move on, even Democrats now are saying, can we move on? It wasn't great, but whatever.
We got through it.
He has on this police officer, Michael Fanone, who was hurt on January 6th. And I feel for what happened to Michael Fanone on January 6th, but I'm over his far left political commentary and then his attempting to present himself as just this like guy without an axe to grind, independent thinker. We know you're a hardened leftist Democrat from the way you sound. I mean, you've made it perfectly clear. So that's fine. You can be, but like, don't be surprised when people react to you in a partisan way. Fanone goes on with Jonathan Capehart. The story was not Fanone in this moment. It was the anchor, Jonathan Capehart, the so-called journalist. Watch this.
Officer Fanone, I'm going to try to get through this. Thank you for what you did 3 years ago today. Please tell me your thoughts on this third anniversary.
Oh, my God. He's crying. Maureen.
So I knew we were going to talk about this. I was really looking forward to it. I did two quick Google searches. One was reporters who cry on the air. Rachel Maddow could not get herself through a segment on children who were crossing the border with their parents illegally and being rehoused in places. She made a big show of having to actually toss off to the next show because she could not get the words out. Mm-hmm. Anderson Cooper maybe has 20 of his greatest hits online. And then I went back and watched that famous part of broadcast news. Do you remember where William Hurt?
Oh, when he faked
gins up the tears. And Holly Hunter, who is in love with him, is watching this and then realizes in that moment that he's a total fraud.
Yes. And she's
and
like,
she has to break up with him.
Yes.
And that's what this reminds me of. And that is this kind of thing that, like, when I was in journalism school, they would use that as example number one of what never to do. And they would kick you out of the industry for it.
Do you think it's fake or you just think it's affected? Like, he brought it on. Like, he did it. No, I guess it's kind of the same thing.
I think he practiced at home in front of the mirror. He had the Kleenex right there. He was moving it. He started out. They hadn't even having a conversation. Why is he so worked up?
It's so true.
He's introducing the segment.
He had the tissue right there. He was dabbing at the nose.
And there were no tears. I mean, housewives do it better.
That is fascinating to me. You could be right. I'm going to have to ask Melissa Francis. She was at Fox for many years. She's my friend, and she used to star in Little House on the Prairie. One of the reasons she got the role as Cassandra Ingalls, that was the second version of children after the first one's aged up,
right?
Is she could cry on demand.
Yeah.
And now when her kids cry, like fake cry, she's like, I really expected better as my offspring. I object. You need to produce actual water or we're not even going to talk. I'm going to run it by her. See what she thinks.
I think you should. I mean, what do you think? Do you think it's fake?
I think it's real because the left is genuinely that upset still over January 6th because they love upset when it comes to anything related to Trump or that will make Trump look bad or our poor democracy that they're so concerned about unless they're trying to boot candidates of choice off of ballots so that the people can't even vote on them. That democracy dying in darkness doesn't hurt them or make them cry. By the way, none of the cops who got hurt. I didn't see Jonathan Capehart cry for the 2,000 cops who got injured in the BLM riots.
No.
I didn't see him cry when we had cops actually dying in the midst of those riots or police precincts being burned down. I didn't see him crying for those cops. Where were your tears then, Jonathan? Didn't see any of that. So spare me.
Great point.
Great to have you.
Always most fun.
All right, come back again soon.
I will.
Next, we're going to get to the actual anti-Semite of the year. Once again, not Maureen.
Thank you.
Big break in those two pieces of script. We'll be right back.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura Glenn Beck,
Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on SiriusXM at home or anywhere you are. No car required. I do it all the time. I love the SiriusXM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.
Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
There has been a shocking rise in anti-Semitism in the United States, or maybe it's just like a rise in our awareness of what's already been out there since Hamas's October 7th attacks. It's so crazy. Think about that. It's just like after 9/11, there was an outpouring of sympathy for the United States. Think about if on September 20th, 2001, what actually happened was a rise in anti-Americanism. That's really what's happening to Israel right now. Why? Because it launched a retaliatory campaign to take out Hamas, the people who did this to it. And yet people here, too many of them, in my view, are responding with some really gross anti-Semitism. Not everything's been anti-Semitic. You want to criticize Netanyahu. You want to criticize the response politically because you think it went too far. Okay, that I can tolerate. That I get. But blaming Israel for the murder of its own people, we're in a different league. And our next guest has been keeping tabs on all those folks, the people who have no sympathy for the hostages, who've been tearing down the posters. I mean, I don't know if there's another person who has worked harder to expose those people than Leora Rez. She's the executive director of Stop Antisemitism. You've likely seen the organization's video on social media exposing violent anti-Israel protesters, people who were hurting students, Jewish students just walking to class. And of course, as I mentioned, those tearing down the pictures of the hostages. She is also here to reveal the 2023 Anti-Semite of the Year. Leora, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
Honestly, we're joking that it's something to win. But really, it's good you're keeping tabs on this because otherwise it continues to fester and it gets worse. So you had a lot of choices in 2023. You probably had more choices this year than ever before.
100%.
So don't tell us yet who it was, but do you want to tell us who was in the last like few who you were narrowing it down to?
Yeah. So, in the end, over 15,000 people voted and the final three were supermodel Gigi Hadid, daughter of known anti-Semite Muhammad Hadid. So it's a family affair over there. Hamas head, Haniya and Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib.
And who is the winner?
So our winner, again, over 15,000 people voted. And Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib won the dishonor.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Won in air quotes.
Yeah.
She beat the head of Hamas.
She did.
Wow.
That's how Americans view her anti-Semitism as being that egregious.
So
that
why?
She beat out the head of Hamas.
Like for people who, I think people have a general feel that the squad is generally pretty anti-Semitic in their comments and so on. And she's been sort of the leader. She's the only Palestinian elected to Congress. So what is it specifically that she's done that you think got her this dishonor?
So since day one, since she's been elected, it's one anti-Semitic incident after another. The first day that she was sworn in and into office, what she did was replace Israel on a map with a sticky note of Palestine. She constantly votes for pro-BDS legislation.
Explain what that is for people who know.
So the anti-Semitic BDS boycott, divest, sanction movement is an anti-Semitic movement that singles out the world's only Jewish nation, Israel, in a double standard methodology that, and it holds it to standards that it holds no other nation, not what's going on in China, not what's going on in Iran, not what's going on in Sudan, in Russia. Their main focus is these false atrocities and these false claims of genocide and apartheid in Israel. Mm-hmm. And they have, and this is what frustrates so many in the Jewish community and our allies, they have no interest in helping the Palestinians. The only thing that this movement does is vilify and isolate and promote more hatred towards the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm. Yes, what is that? Because you look around just in the wake of this conflict, and Jordan won't take the refugees from Palestine, and Egypt certainly won't take them. They're like, it's a hard wall. Good luck. And nobody in the Middle East will. So well, if they're so sympathetic for, you know, towards the Palestinians, why don't they take them? Why aren't they outraged about what's happening to Muslims in other parts of the world? It's just this particular group whom they won't help.
So we've been asking this for years now. If you look at the grotesque war happening in Syria, how many fellow Muslims Assad has gassed. If you look at the civil war in Sudan, how many, literally, there's a genocide happening. You don't hear about it. You don't hear about what's happening in Iran. For some reason, the Arab world is just so grossly focused on this Palestinian conflict. There's financial incentives to keep on promoting it, and they want to keep it a Jewish problem. That's the only thing that makes sense.
It works for them on a number of levels. So Rashida Tlaib, she's just, there have been so many examples, but the one that comes to mind is when the Fox reporter got her in the hallway asking her about children who'd been murdered by Hamas. We'll play it just to remind the audience at home who she is and what she's sounded like in the wake of these atrocities in Sot 23.
Terrorists have cut off babies' heads and burned children alive. Do you support Israel's rights to defend themselves against this brutality?
We're just going to go through here.
You can't comment about Hamas terrorists chopping off babies' heads? Congresswoman, do you have a comment on Hamas terrorists chopping off babies' heads? You have nothing to say about Hamas terrorists chopping off babies' heads? Do you condone what Hamas has done, chopping off babies' heads, burning children alive, raping women in the street?
Yeah. So that's Rashida Tlaib.
Seven times she was asked, correct?
Yeah.
Seven times she could not muster a word of sympathy. Seven times. Mm-hmm. We're talking over 1,000 Israelis and foreign nationals butchered. We're talking about babies burned alive, countless women raped, girls as young as 12, 13 years old. That's what new testimony and evidence is showing. We're talking about savage raping pedophiles, elderly survivors, some Holocaust survivors, elderly victims, excuse me, some Holocaust survivors shot point blank in the head at a bus stop. A sitting U.S. Congresswoman being asked seven times if she would denounce the murdering of babies, and she could not say no. This is stomach churning to me as an American.
What does it say about her? And I mean, we have a fair amount of the squad coming out of places in Michigan, coming out of Minnesota. What does it say about those pockets? Her district has got a lot of Palestinian Americans now there. What does it say about us that we've elected her? You know, we elected AOC. We elected Ilhan Omar over in Minnesota. Like, things don't seem to be going that great in Dearborn, Michigan.
It's not. And it's honestly an embarrassment for America that such a hate-filled individual is sitting in such a prestigious position in the United States government. And the only thing that we can hope for is that she will be voted out of office.
But she won't, right? Because her constituency feels as she does.
So I'm a very optimistic person, and I'm hoping that her constituency sees that her hate is not getting them anywhere. Mm-hmm. Her district continues to decline in economic numbers, in health value numbers. I want to know, what is she doing for her district?
How much do you worry about the immigration problem right now and who's coming in, given, you know, the Jew hatred that we're seeing spread?
Listen, it's concerning. I think we have a massive issue at the southern border, as nearly every American does. And it's extremely concerning when we're hearing in the news that Syrian men ages 18 through 26 are coming through the southern border. What are they doing? And listen, I'm an immigrant from the former Soviet Union. We came here when I was 5 years old to escape communism and its evil twin socialism. So I'm an immigrant. I'm for legal immigration, for proper procedures and protocols and policies, and for proper vetting. However, when we're seeing, you know, men age 18 coming, where are the women? Where are the children? Mm-hmm. Why are we seeing young men from the Middle East? So it's extremely concerning.
Yeah. Do we really want to become France? Have you seen what's happened to French people? Have you seen the change in culture over there, the change in what's happening with young women and how they're not able to walk around in certain areas with tank tops anymore without getting harassed?
No, there are no-go zones.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The French police are even afraid, you know, to go in certain areas. So no, do we want that in the United States? And the answer is no, absolutely not.
She seems like she'd be fine with it. Tlaib, I think, would be delighted to see that happen because she's been on the wrong side of virtually every issue relating to Israel or Jewish people from the start. And I don't, you see like dead babies, tortured children and tortured elderly, and you have any reaction other than I'm horrified and I'm happy to tell you that in a microphone, there's something wrong with you. Like there's something wrong with this person, but she's not alone. She's not alone. That's why you had so many to choose from. And there's a story every day. And God bless you guys at Stop Anti-Semitism, because I, as you know, I'm all over your X feed.
You are. Thank you so much for your allyship.
Of course. I can't believe it's like drinking from a fire hose, yep. Right? You must have so many people yes. sending you things. Yes. And among other things, those hostage tear down videos are so irritating because the callousness with which the 9 times out of 10, it's like some young female, it's men too, but like it's often some young female woke college campus loser who has zero empathy for what's happening in many cases to the female hostages, including yep. Americans, right now. So we put together just a little montage of some of the best of. Here it is in SOT 30.
Why are you ripping these down?
Because it's false information and you're beat.
What's false? Hold on. What's false about it?
Listen, I'm going to rip it off whether you're here recording me or not. I already spoke to a cop. This shit is legal. So you're beat.
No, stop.
You're so beat. It's 100% legal and you're beat. What you going to do about it?
You're just fucking outrageous.
What's outrageous?
You. Why don't you do something for Palestine? Why don't you do me?
This is for Palestine.
Show your face. Show your face. Show your face.
Don't worry about it.
You're going to be. I'm not touching you.
You're harassing us.
Okay. No, no, no. You'll be all of.
Why are you tearing them down? Innocent people were kidnapped.
Tearing down a poster of my cousin Sharon. She is currently hostage in Gaza right now. What the fuck are you doing?
You really that is
my cousin. My cousin's hostage in Gaza, and you're tearing her, you're tearing a poster down of her.
That when they won't show their faces, I mean, it's especially annoying. Like you don't even have the guts to own what you're doing.
We view it as challenging, where it gives us extra incentive to see who they are and kind of look into, you know, their methodology, their internal thinking as to why they're doing what they're doing.
How often do you get your man or woman when you post and say, please help us identify who this is?
We're about a 50% success rate.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, it's a lot of college kids. We've had a few medical professionals.
Yep, I've seen that.
A dentist.
More than a few.
Right. I'm using that loosely. And it's honestly, what's troubling to me, you know, some of these women doing it are mothers, we found out. And when you're looking at a poster of a kidnapped baby and you have any other thought than awe or, oh my gosh, what happened, or anything besides empathy or compassion, and instead you have this rage and anger that causes you to actually destroy property that's not yours, this, you have to ask, what kind of person, how much hate do you have to be filled with to physically tear something down and destroy it?
I know. No, it's true, because I see the videotapes of you know, the hurting Palestinian children in this.
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
Yes.
That's what a normal person feels
yes.
when you see suffering like that. I have the right perspective. I understand that this has been unleashed on them by Hamas and that Israel's doing everything within its power to not hurt innocents, to not hurt children. But you wouldn't know that from the mainstream narrative. Right. Or even, have you been surprised at how quickly the Democrats, not all, but many, have abandoned Israel in this and gone quickly to ceasefire, ceasefire.
So I have to tell you, when we look back at Tlaib, we were so pleasantly surprised to see 22 members of her own party who have basically said enough is enough.
They censured her.
Yes. And she became at that time the 26th member of the House to be censured. Thank God. Finally, unfortunately, took a massacre like October 7th for many members of her own party to say enough is enough. Again, it's how much anti-Semitism do you have to spew?
Well, and in that case, she had been openly lying about Israel.
And was caught about it.
Bombing the hospital.
Yes.
And even when the leftists on MSNBC were saying, okay, that wasn't right. And the New York Times had to correct its headline. I mean, even then, she refused to acknowledge reality.
Yes. She was even community noted. So above the New York Times, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Above XYZ. She was community noted. She still refused to take down that libelous tweet because her one goal while sitting in office is not appeasing her constituents, is not making her communities better that she's representing. It's vilifying the world's only Jewish country, Israel.
I mean, do you think it didn't used to be so partisan when it came to Israel in
no.
the United States? It used to have bipartisan support. And then we saw that thing at the Democratic National Convention. I can't remember the year. I think it was 2012.
Yep.
Was it 12 or 16? I think it was 12.
12.
Where they weren't in support and they made it clear, right? Remember that? They shouted out. It was like, do we support as part of our platform that we support Israel? And they either tried to vote it down or did vote it down. It was a shocking moment, I remember.
Yep.
And since then, in the explosion of DEI, it's turned. And then there's a segment on the right, too. There's a segment on the right. I mean, for sure, the alt-right, they've been wanting 1,000%. To kill Ben Shapiro or silence Ben Shapiro and other Jewish, you know, prominent Americans for a long time.
1,000%.
They kind of met around the bend there, those two groups.
Yes.
And man, oh man, it's exploded.
It has. And the most startling thing that we're seeing is that white supremacists keep referring to the Zionist that, the Zionist that, the Zionist this, the Zionist nation. And what they're doing, they're adopting this radical left language that the squad has just mastered with AOC and Bowman and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. And now we see Summer Lee into that mix since the last election cycle. And what they do, it's—
Where's she from? She's
PA. She's a representative in Pennsylvania. Yeah, it was a very close race.
Not ready for prime time.
No, she's not. We were very concerned when we saw the shell organization running all of these squad members, Justice Dems, pushing her with all their might. She won by a very, very tiny margin. You know, we're hearing that her constituents are also not very thrilled with her, which, you know, gives us a little bit of hope. But we're seeing for the first time this massive horseshoe theory where the alt-right and these neo-Nazis on the right are mirroring the exact rhetoric these radical lefties are mirroring, are spewing. And it's so frightening. And it has Jews in the middle.
Yeah. Like, it's scary.
It's very scary.
There are the incidents, I mean, we could spend all day going through the incidents. I'll just touch on a couple of the ones that we saw recently. This past weekend or week in New York, in Westchester, a high school basketball game in Yonkers had to be canceled mid-game. I'm sure you saw this.
Yep.
Mid-game.
Yep.
When players on the home team, which was, hold on, I want to make sure I say it. Was it Roosevelt? Roosevelt. Roosevelt High School, a public school in Yonkers, faced off against a private Jewish school, players from the Leffel School, and thought it might be fun to scream, "You fucking Jew," at these girls. "I support Hamas. Forgive me for just saying it outright." And they had to stop the game in the middle of the game. They said that from the outset, the Jewish players were being shown hostility and aggression, substantially more jabs and comments thrown than they had ever experienced in the past, quoting here from, let's see, I actually don't even know where I printed this out from, but I'll find it. And in the middle, they decided to end the game. Roosevelt High School agreed to a voluntary forfeit. And now the spokesman for Yonkers Public Schools doesn't seem to care much. Downplayed the shocking behavior, saying, oh, a student athlete made a statement involving Free Palestine. It was addressed. That's it.
Yeah, no. So the coach, apparently I learned this morning that the coach stepped down or was fired or forcibly resigned.
Good.
Something like that. However, no one knows his identity. So I'd love it if one of your listeners or somebody new, please, I invite them to email us at info@stopantisemitism.org.
Okay.
And let us know who this coach is, because he doesn't deserve the anonymity. If I have to tell you, I don't think this is the first time this happened. I think there was probably, you know, anti-Semitic bigoted language probably in the locker room during practice times, things like that. The fact that it came to this fiasco of a, you know, situation, you know, leads me to believe that this coach should have been let go a while ago. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why his identity is being hidden. Also would love to know other players that were involved that were not punished. As far as we know, only one player was removed from the team. We're hearing from the school, the Jewish school, however, that multiple players from Roosevelt were making the anti-Semitic racist comments. So it's being minimized. It's trying to be brushed under the rug. The good news, you know, it's out there. It's in the media. But Stop Anti-Semitism exists to expose who these anti-Semites are.
Yeah.
Who's allowing this hatred? So we want to know. So if anybody out there knows, please email us, info@stopantisemitism.org.
This is one of the debates that we've been having in the country. And I had it with Vivek Ramaswamy on X. And then when he came on my show after the fourth presidential debate, he is against the outing of really names and attaching consequences to those who are protesting against Israel in even an offensive way. I mean, he basically says, and forgive me, Vivek, if I get it a little wrong, but you can look at his comments directly. He said it on Twitter and elsewhere, that we shouldn't be punishing stupid college kids for stupid positions that they had. You know, in which response to which I say, well, this isn't like joining Greenpeace and then later realizing, wait, that was folly. This is something, you know, very different.
So I have to tell you, and he's not the only one that states that. And our answer is stop treating 18-year-olds like infants. They can vote. They can serve in the army. They can buy guns. They can smoke. The only thing that they can't do at 18, 19, 20 is drink. So no, stop infantilizing terrorist supporters. And secondly, we're not exposing anybody who's critiquing Israel. You want to critique Israel? I mean, go look at the Jewish community. We love critiquing Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, the cabinet. That's not anti-Semitic. What's anti-Semitic is calling for the removal of the world's only Jewish nation. It's boycotting the world's only Jewish nation. Well, you're ignoring actual atrocities happening globally. So I respectfully disagree. They have First Amendment rights to spew their speech, to support Hamas verbally. And we have, you know, our First Amendment rights to expose that.
To call them out.
Absolutely. To alert their students, their professors,
their university presidents.
Their university presidents, to see who amongst them are supporting Hamas. Because again, this isn't like, oh, Israel is bad, Palestine is good. Okay, great. That's like, you like vanilla, you like chocolate. We don't care. However, if you're saying there's Hamas terrorists are resistance fighters and they did nothing wrong, this is insane. And at 18 years old, I had the intelligence level to know not to support a terror group.
Yeah. You're either very, very dumb and uninformed, or you're very, very hateful.
Yes.
To justify anything that happened.
And we lean, and we're leaning towards the hateful, unfortunately, which is so frightening. Well,
you've got evidence of it.
Yep.
You've got plenty of evidence. I have to give a shout out to Syracuse University. I'm sorry, they're not perfect, but Syracuse University on camera made the rounds on social media this weekend. It happened in mid-December, where the administrator is enforcing the code of conduct against a bunch of students who are calling for an intifada. It's going to be easier for the YouTube audience because you kind of need to see it in the captions, but I'm going to play it anyway. Watch it. SOT 20.
So we need to ask you to go down and failure to comply can result in
you. He's telling me you can't call for intifada.
We're concerned about the word intifada.
Thank you, my friend. We're just concerned about the word intifada.
I'm not going to give him sort of
this is not a debate. She's asking what it means.
I'm trying to tell you that the person has deemed that to be inappropriate and it needs to be removed.
the one girl's like, where? What policy? Show it to me. And he gives it to her saying, it's right there. You can hear the edge rise in the girl. She's not asking for a definition. Yep. Like, they're not used to being.
They're not used to being told no.
Yeah.
And no is no. It's like he's talking to a group of toddlers.
Right across the way in Cornell, they've been handling things very differently, yep. right? That's where you had the professor out there like, I was exhilarated yes. to see all the Jews die.
Yes. And what happened to him? He got a slap on the hand. He can't teach for a semester. It's mm-hmm. pathetic. And furthermore, if we look at Cornell, it's so bad there. The FBI is investigating the anti-Semitism there after a student was arrested posting on a thread board his desire to murder Jews.
Right. Now, they've taken to, you know, the college campuses pulling down the posters, but they've also taken to stopping traffic in New York. We have some video. It happened over the weekend in, I think it was Seattle, Washington, yep. or it was Oregon. My team will tell me. But this, you tell me whether this is the way forward to make it impossible for commuters to get to work, to get to their sports game, to get home to their family. I mean, talk about undermining your own campaign.
If you're looking to create enemies, please continue doing this because it has to be the silliest, most counterproductive thing that I think any kind of activist movement could do. Let's take a look at what happened JFK during the holiday.
You're watching right now.
JFK during the holiday season. I mean, we all know how stressful it is flying in and out of JFK. You know, you're running late. There's traffic. Weather's crazy. Yada yada. All of a sudden, you see a blockade of people. It got so bad, people had to get out of their car and walk with their suitcases to their gates. Oh, or in Seattle this past weekend when they barricaded the five.
Yes, that's what it was.
And there was an ambulance here's with Seattle. Its lights.
Look at this, courtesy of Jason Rance. He's been on the show. It's crazy. Can you imagine the anger you would feel at that mob we just showed, making it so that you couldn't get to the grocery store, to the doctor for your medication, to the pharmacy, to the hospital, to your job?
What is this doing to quote unquote free Palestine? It's doing nothing. It's creating more hate and division. It's the silliest thing that it's silly, it's dumb, it's counterproductive. And the people who are funding it, which we think it's the People's Forum, it's this multi-million-dollar project out of New York City, they're doing nothing to help the Palestinian people. The only thing they're managing to do is grab headlines and create more hate and division.
What did you make of that picture of Jennifer Garner and her daughter, Violet? Violet, one of the daughters she shares with Ben Affleck, with this mask. I mean, it was like you would think typhoid had returned. It was like next level.
Listen, I have a mother who's, you know, knock on wood, B'ezrat Hashem. She is a survivor of leukemia. So anything, heaven forbid, can really harm her. So I never want to insult somebody if they're a little bit extra concerned about germs. She's outside. Okay, I'm not one to judge. It's none of my business. Mm-hmm. What I am concerned, though, is the Free Palestine movement has taken a watermelon, and has repurposed it as a sign of the Free Palestine movement. And what's so funny to me is that Israel is actually one of the largest exporters of watermelons.
Oh,
so this
she
is
was wearing it. That's why.
So yeah. So that's why I'm mentioning it. But what it is, or what this hoodie that she was wearing, it basically was this watermelon taking over the entire land. And whether you have Judea and Samaria, otherwise known as the West Bank, you have Israel proper, you have Gaza, the watermelon encompassed the entire land from the river, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, which again, when they're chanting from the river to the sea, 90% of it have no idea what the hell they're saying.
They can't name it.
No, of course not. They're like, oh yeah, what mountain range? Yada, yada. It's ridiculous. So she's wearing this sweatshirt with this watermelon stretched across, you know, encompassing the entire land. And social media blew up. And at first I was like, you know, this is just silly. We shouldn't really feature it. Then my team was like, no, we actually should. She's an adult. She's 18 years old now. Yep. She is promoting something. She has nothing, like no idea.
That's the thing.
Right. To millions. And it's problematic because when we look at what's happening behind the scenes to, you know, with kids on TikTok, on Instagram, being fed this constant anti-Semitic false propaganda by the likes of Sean King and so on and so forth, it's a problem. She's the product of it.
What do we do about TikTok?
I'm hoping one day we get rid of TikTok in the United States. I mean, it's not in our home.
Yeah, it's not in ours either.
And, you know, I'm not against social media. You know, we have it. We obviously Stop Anti-Semitism utilizes the social media platforms, but TikTok is so extremely problematic. We hope that one day it's removed from the United States.
I will tell you, my kids are not allowed on TikTok, but there are a lot of adults that use it. And so I do go there as a news person, because I agree with what Vivek said at that one debate, even though he sort of had flip-flopped on it. We do need to be getting our message out there. Like I will continue saying the things I'm saying and putting them on TikTok in the hopes that somebody will listen to me.
Yep.
Until TikTok is no longer a thing, because we can't. The answer is not just to seed the whole conversation.
Should we get on
lunatics?
TikTok?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe we'll get
go
on.
Go there under
if
protest.
If you tell me to get on, maybe I'll get on.
Why would we seed the whole debate?
Yeah.
In front of young people.
Yep.
To the lunatics.
Listen, I have to tell you the thing that really. It's not just myself. The whole romanticizing Osama bin Laden.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
If that didn't open people's eyes.
Wow. And then a few weeks later, you have a member of the LGBTQ plus community promoting the Quran.
Yeah.
And wow. I'm like, are you not aware of what happens to members of the LGBTQ community in the Middle East? It's punishable by death in certain countries.
They didn't read to the end. They didn't.
No, they didn't.
I got to run because we're out of time. Leora, thank you for all you do. God bless you.
No, thanks so much for having me.
All the best.
So much fun.
Come back anytime. Tomorrow, Victor Davis Hanson. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.